Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Here on Stolen Lives, we discuss brutal and heartbreaking crimes against children. Themes may include child murder, torture, and sexual, domestic, and child abuse. I do try my best to remain respectful for the babies in these stories and leave out unnecessary details that honestly, none of us need to know to understand the frustration of why and how this ever happened. However, if you find any of these themes triggering, this podcast may not be for you. Listener discretion is advised. February 2014, Tyabb, Victoria, Australia. Rosie Batty initially thought there was no way her son's father, Greg Anderson, could hurt their son. However, after he started becoming violent and making threats against both their lives, Rosie knew she needed to take action. She warned authorities, hoping to save both her and her son's lives. Despite this, the courts wouldn't listen until Greg made good on his threats in the middle of a public area in broad daylight. This is Rosie and Luke's story.
We've had an absolute tragedy occur here tonight. About 6:40 p.m. the police have arrived and they've been confronted by a male, about 50 years old, armed with a knife. They've attempted to use less than lethal force, foam. It's been unsuccessful. They have then discharged a firearm, shooting that male once in the chest. He's at the Alfred Hospital at the moment in a life-threatening condition. A further examination of the scene has revealed the body of a 12-year-old boy who's deceased, and at the moment we're still making inquiries in relation to the exact cause of that death. The male that the police shot was the father of the deceased boy.
Rosie Batty was born in Nottinghamshire, England, where she grew up on a farm with her younger brothers. Heartbreakingly, when Rosie was only 6 years old, her mother would pass away from peritonitis. As someone who has lost a parent at a young age, I can attest there is a time of confusion where you don't understand where that parent has gone and that they are never coming back. Rosie's father did an amazing job though, and with help from grandparents from both sides of the family, Rosie and her brothers grew up very much loved and cared for. After high school, Rosie wasn't exactly sure what she wanted to do for the rest of her life. All she knew was that she wanted to see the world, starting her adventures in Austria before making her way to Australia in 1986, where she would work as a nanny. Rosie fell in love with the lifestyle and the environment, which I get. This is such an incredible country to live in, not biased at all. Rosie would continue her world tour before she returned to the United Kingdom for a time. But Rosie knew where her heart belonged, and by 1992 she was back in Australia and living in Melbourne, Victoria. 1992. Rosie Batty was working at a recruitment agency, and this is where she would meet Greg Anderson. The two quickly entered into a relationship, but there were some red flags that disturbed Rosie. Greg was quite controlling and possessive and sexually aggressive. And after 2 years together, their relationship ended. Not only that, but Rosie cut off all contact with Greg and they didn't talk for 8 years. 2001. Rosie was having somewhat of a midlife crisis. She was feeling a little lost. She was in her early 40s, single, and all of her friends were married off, most with children. And while Rosie wasn't convinced that she ever wanted children, she enjoyed her independence, if she was honest. But there was this yearning for something more. It was during this time of self-reflection that Greg came back into her life and the two started sleeping together. And this fling of sorts resulted in Rosie falling pregnant. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
June 20th, 2002. The world would welcome Luke Batty. And although Greg chose not to be present for his son's birth, Rosie was surrounded by love with a handful of friends there to support the new mother. And she needed that support because Rosie was scared. After losing her mother at such a young age, there was this fear of loving someone that deeply again, only just to lose them. Rosie needn't worry, however, because as soon as she laid her eyes on Luke, it was love at first sight. There was this unbreakable bond between mother and son that, look, I don't think broke the day Luke died. I would argue that bond still exists on some plane until this day. Rosie would do anything to protect Luke, and Luke was fiercely protective of his mother. Rosie and Greg didn't want a relationship, and initially Greg didn't want anything to do with his son. Rosie didn't want this, however. She had grown up with only one parent, and this wasn't something she wanted for Luke. She gently encouraged Greg to be a family, and eventually he did. As time went on, the three would become this dysfunctional family unit. It wouldn't be long, however, that all those red flags that initially scared Rosie away from having a relationship with Greg would resurface. It would start small, that concerning comment when something didn't go his way. But it would soon escalate to verbal abuse, threats and intimidation, Greg threatening to kill Rosie. And this would continue on for 3 years. Rosie was torn because she wanted this united family environment for her son. But on the flip side, she was scared of him. Though what she would maintain through all of this was she'd never thought Greg would ever harm Luke, because Luke was never a target for his anger or threats. Greg always held his son in high regard. He was a proud dad of everything Luke achieved. The situation became too much for Rosie in 2005 when Luke was 3 years old. Greg would attack Rosie by flying into a rage and throwing Rosie against the wall, holding her there by the skin of her neck, before shoving her to the ground. All the while, Greg is screaming at Rosie and telling her he was going to kill her, right in front of their infant son. Rosie knew in her heart that she could not put Luke through this, and police were involved, although the authorities never officially filed charges against Greg. And this would have been incredibly frustrating for Rosie. It seemed he never had to take accountability for his actions. Greg threatened Rosie numerous times that if she ever stopped him from seeing Luke, he would kill her, and she believed him. In late 2005, Rosie entered into a new relationship and the couple would remain together for 5 years. In that time, Greg backed off with his threats and intimidation towards Rosie, and everything seemed to be at peace with the world. But it would be when that relationship ended and Rosie was again single, Greg was back in their lives, causing chaos and turmoil. May 2012. Greg flew into one of his rages and attacked Rosie, threatening to beat her with a vase. Again, this happened in front of Luke, who was almost 10 now, and old enough to understand what was going on. Luke called 000, Australia's emergency services. He reported that his father was hurting his mother, but for reasons, well, no reasons, but police would take some time to arrive. Luke must have been absolutely terrified. He would later tell police that he tried to pull Greg off Rosie and he couldn't because he was too small. And how he wished he was bigger so he could protect his mother. That makes me tear up. A child that age shouldn't have to think that, let alone witness what he did. Greg was arrested and charged with assault. The following day, a risk assessment was done on the family and an order of protection was issued for both Rosie and Luke. However, shoddy police work again, because Greg would be released while this paperwork was being done. So by the time the order was finally filed, they couldn't issue him with it because they had no idea where he was. There would actually be another incident before Greg would even be served. January 4th, 2013. Greg went to Rosie's home and threatened to kill her. Thankfully, Luke wasn't there that night to witness this. Rosie contacted police, but by the time they got there, Greg was long gone. In the eyes of the police, that meant problems solved and they were no longer needed. But Rosie was understandably scared, and she begged them to stay a while longer. And it was lucky they did because Greg came back. Police arrested him and finally issued him with the order of protection. All the while, Greg was just arguing back and basically throwing a tantrum. Quote, "I only answer to Jesus. I want to know why you think you got a right to hold me at all." Unquote. Greg refused to answer any of the police's questions back at the police station. At one point, Greg got up and went and sat in the corner of the room and faced the wall with his arms crossed, like he was putting himself in a timeout. Incredibly bizarre and unhinged behaviour.
"I intend to interview you in relation to making threats to kill and making threats to inflict serious injury and use unregistered motor vehicle. Before continuing, I must inform you, you do not have to say or do anything, but anything you say or do may be given in evidence. Do you understand that?"
"I do. So I don't wish to say anything. Matter's finished. I wish to leave."
"Yep, that's your right. I'll just read you this right as well. I must also inform you of your rights. You have the right to communicate with or attempt to communicate with a friend or relative to inform that person of your whereabouts. You have the right to communicate with or attempt to communicate with a legal practitioner. If you are not a citizen or permanent resident of Australia, you have the right to communicate with or attempt to communicate with the consular officer of the country of which you are a citizen. Do you understand these rights?"
"What right do you think you have to hold me for what?"
"I'll get to that.
What right you've got to have me here at all?"
"Do you understand the rights that have just been read to you?"
I understand what you've read to me. I want to know why you think that you've got a right to hold me at all."
"Okay. Do you wish to exercise any of these rights before the interview proceeds?"
"Well, the interview's finished. I said I do not wish to comment."
"Okay.
You have nothing. There is nothing.
Yep.
So let's move on."
"In fairness to yourself, I just need to get through these questions and then whatever you want to say after that, we can do that."
"I said I don't wish to say anything, so how can there be questions and answers? You're now insulting my right of intelligence. Right? And you're denying my right to legally represent myself by saying I do not wish to answer them. Do you understand what I'm saying to you?"
"No, I don't. I'm not denying you a right, that's why I'm asking
you." "You've denied me because I told you I do not wish to answer anything."
"Yep.
That's right. Now you're going to ask me a list of questions."
"Yep.
You've denied me the right."
"Okay. So at this point in time, do you wish to exercise the right to call a lawyer or friend or relative?"
"No.
No.
I wish to leave. You have nothing, I wish to leave. You've arrested me before, it's gone through the court, you've had nothing. You've got the same person lying again."
"Yep. Well, we'll just back up a bit. What's your age and date of birth?"
"You still have that information from before."
"Yep.
It's on my driver's license. You're asking me questions and that. And I said I would not ask questions, and you're still firing at me. Okay. You again have not exercised the right that you asked in the beginning that I could have."
"Yep.
You're denying me my right by asking me my questions, top hand, constable."
"Okay.
In the name of Jesus Christ, you are."
"If I say to you, date of birth, the 3rd of November 1959, would you agree?" "I'm going to suspend the interview at this time due to no participation from the accused."
Greg would be released on bail on the stipulations he was not allowed to go to the suburb where Rosie and Luke lived and where Luke went to school and played cricket. Not sure what the point of this was, because under the order of protection, this would have already been covered. That he could not come within a specified distance of Rosie's home or Rosie and Luke themselves. The Department of Child Services, or DOCS as we'll refer to them in this story. DOCS did their risk assessment to determine what part Greg would have in Luke's life. And they determined Rosie was doing everything that was required to keep her son safe. And that while Greg had been abusive to Rosie, there was no evidence any of this violence was directed towards Luke. And no evidence he couldn't be a good father to his son. I would dispute this. While, yes, Greg hadn't been physically violent towards Luke, the amount of psychological and emotional abuse he had caused this little boy was significant. It is incredibly close-minded of DOCS not to consider all types of domestic violence, not just that that can be physically measured. Abuse comes in many forms and are all incredibly damaging, especially to a vulnerable little boy like Luke. Greg would be in and out of prison a few times, with warrants out for him for possession of child pornography. On his phone, there were photos of young girls aged between 10 and 14 years old, so obviously not Luke. But I would still think that having these photos would create a risk for Luke's safety. But police weren't able to track him down because at the time, Greg was homeless. Greg's last known address was a Russian Orthodox monastery. But then he was banned from there after making abusive phone calls to them. So now he was living in his car. Despite the order of protection, it would be to the surprise of no one that Greg would continue to breach the conditions. April 2013. Greg showed up to watch Luke play football, taunting Rosie the entire time. When Rosie would later report this to police, they told her that she needed to report any breaches as they happened, so they could come and arrest him. But then when the same occurrence happened later that same month, police would tell Rosie they couldn't arrest him. I can only imagine the frustration and helpless feelings Rosie would have been going through throughout all of this. Greg would just keep breaching the orders, showing up at football games and training, and then he started going to Luke's school. After about a month of this happening very regularly, police would finally arrest Greg and he was held for 2 weeks. Once he was released and reminded to stay away from his former partner and son, only for him to continue to breach the orders again, and then the cycle would start again. There was no real punishment or deterrent for Greg to stop intimidating Rosie by continuously breaching the orders, because police weren't taking any real action. Basically, it was just a slap on the wrist and sending Greg on his way. July 2013. The order of protection that was supposed to prevent Greg from seeing Luke expired. He was now able to spend time with Luke on the weekends, as long as they were in public places. And this also allowed Greg to attend some of Luke's football and cricket training and games. Rosie went along with the theory that if she appeased Greg for this little win in his books, this would hopefully mean Greg in turn would be more compliant. And since these visits and Luke's training and games were in public places with heaps of people around, this would mean they were safe from Greg's anger and abuse. At the same time, Greg's life was spiralling out of control. As I mentioned, he was homeless. He had no job. He really had nothing positive going for him. Nothing except Luke. And by February 2014, when our story takes place, the three of them, Greg, Rosie and Luke, they were coexisting well, and overall there hadn't been any issues for more than 6 months. There had been no warning signs as to what was going to happen that would change their lives forever. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
The morning of February 12, 2014 started as any normal day would. 11-year-old Luke Batty was in the 6th grade, and he was excited to go to school and see his friends. Rosie driving her son to school and giving him a quick hug as he raced into the school grounds. At that age, it isn't cool to be seen with your parent or any PDA, so Luke was eager to go and join his mates. Rosie would later recall Luke was a great kid, almost as tall as her already. He was sensitive and protective of his mother, as we already know. Luke was just your typical Australian boy. He loved his sport, especially cricket and footy. Luke loved school because that was where his friends were. He wasn't overly academic, but he was smart. Everyone who knew Luke would say he was quick-witted and always had an opinion. That evening, Luke tried to convince his mother not to make him go to cricket training. He wanted to stay home and game with his friends. But Rosie wouldn't hear of it. She lectured Luke on his commitment to the team and told him he was going. Luke hadn't seen his dad for a while. Rosie and Luke had just returned from a vacation visiting extended family. When they arrived at training, seeing Greg, who seemed excited to see his son, and Luke was happy to see Greg. He enjoyed his father being a part of his life. After training, Luke wanted to spend some time with his father and asked his mother for a few extra minutes with his dad to practice cricket with him. Luke was proud of himself with just how much he was improving and kind of wanted to show off to Greg with how good he was getting. Rosie, of course, said it was fine, and Luke raced off to where Greg was waiting near the batting nets. The two were there alone. However, the field was still packed with other families who had just gotten done with cricket training. Just after Luke had gotten back over to where Greg was, an 8-year-old boy who was present would later recount to police. that he saw Greg raise the cricket bat over his shoulder and bring it back down at full force. The boy didn't see anything beyond that, but what he did see scared him enough to run over and tell his dad, who called 000 emergency services. Both first responders and Rosie would later state they weren't sure what was going on initially, that they thought that somehow Luke had accidentally hurt himself and Greg was helping him. As Rosie would later tell reporters, quote, "There was no reason to be concerned. I thought it was an open environment," unquote. But as first responders attempted to reach Luke, they realised that Greg was armed with a knife. He was yelling and threatening, saying that Luke was now in heaven. What would later be discovered, as soon as Greg got Luke alone by the batting nets, he had struck his son multiple times with a cricket bat, before pulling out a knife and stabbing Luke before stabbing himself. By this point, police were also on the scene, and they were attempting to alleviate the situation, circling Greg and asking him to surrender. Greg felt cornered, and he was now lunging at the officers with a knife, resulting in him being shot to stop him from hurting anyone else. Paramedics got to work trying to stabilise both Greg and Luke, Greg begging them to let him die, which would ultimately be true, and he would die from his injuries in hospital the following day. Unfortunately, so did Luke, despite desperate resuscitation efforts at the scene and in the ambulance en route to the hospital. 11-year-old Luke Batty would be pronounced dead soon after arrival.
We've had an absolute tragedy occur here tonight. About 6:40 p.m. the police have arrived and they've been confronted by a male, about 50 years old, armed with a knife. They've attempted to use less than lethal force, foam. It's been unsuccessful. They have then discharged a firearm, shooting that male once in the chest. He's at the Alfred Hospital at the moment in a life-threatening condition. A further examination of the scene has revealed the body of a 12-year-old boy. The male that the police shot was the father of the deceased boy.
We've heard some pretty horrific stories of the man. When police arrived, the man was bashing the kid with a cricket bat. Can you confirm that?
What I can say is it's a horrific scene. We've got the death of a young boy. His mother is clearly absolutely distraught, and our thoughts and prayers go out to her and the extended family.
Rosie was in a state of shock. Greg loved Luke. Never in a million years would you think that Greg was ever going to do anything to harm their son. Quote, "No one loved Luke more than his father. No one loved Luke more than me. We both loved him." Unquote. Rosie would later state if there was a silver lining to any of this, it would be increased awareness about the issue of family violence.
Violence happens to everybody, no matter how nice your house is, how intelligent you are.
The distraught mother of an 11-year-old boy savagely stabbed and beaten to death by his father, Greg Batty, after cricket practice. The incident happened in Tyab, Victoria, in Australia, as parents and children watched on in horror. Rosie Batty spoke to reporters on Thursday morning and revealed her estranged husband had a history of violence and mental illness. She also paid tribute to her son.
He was effervescent, he was funny. He wasn't the best scholar, but he was intelligent. He enjoyed his school at Flinders.
54-year-old Greg Batty was shot by police at the scene and later died in hospital. Rosie told reporters that Greg had suffered from an undiagnosed mental illness for two decades.
No one loved Luke more than Greg, his father. No one loved Luke more than me. We both loved him.
Rosie did absolutely everything she could to protect her son. She went through the courts and took out orders of protection. She got the police involved any time something happened. But she never thought Greg would do what he did to Luke, especially not in a public place. It was shocking to everyone. A coronial inquest went ahead to see what mistakes were made and if those mistakes could have prevented Luke's death. This inquest found many factors contributed to what happened. Firstly, the many undiagnosed mental health issues Greg had shown throughout his adult life. He was clearly unstable, emotionally volatile, and uncooperative with any sort of authority. Greg refused to get help for his mental health. Greg had a distrust of doctors. He never sought help for his anger or received an official diagnosis for his mental disorder. Instead, he allowed himself to spiral out of control, and this negatively affected everyone around him. Any time he had interactions with police, he was dismissive, aggressive and uncooperative. He purposely missed court appearances, refused to follow court orders and constantly played the victim. Despite all the red flags that police clearly saw, despite his history of violence and threatening the lives of those around him, he was always let out on bail and always given these orders. Despite the court knowing very well he wasn't going to follow through. The inquest also found that a former roommate of Greg's had also taken out an order of protection against him, after Greg threatened to decapitate him. Police reportedly been searching for Greg, unable to find him to serve him this order. However, just 2 weeks before Luke's death, Rosie had actually contacted the authorities to inform them of his address. But police were concerned for Rosie's safety if they immediately went, because then he would know that Rosie was the one who told them. Although given he also had an outstanding warrant for child pornography as well, I'm not sure what the threat to Rosie's safety would be. Given the natures of those charges, Greg wouldn't have been eligible for bail that time, potentially meaning Luke would have never seen his father that day and never been killed. The inquest concluded that no one could have foreseen the tragic death of 11-year-old Luke Batty. Again, this is despite years of exposure to family violence and the number of gaps in the family violence system. I just don't buy that statement. So much could have been done to save Luke's life. Coroner Ian Gray called Luke's death, quote, a tragic loss of a young life full of promise, unquote, and that his father was solely responsible for his death, making 20 recommendations how situations such as these can be handled better in the future.
I'm really pleased with Judge Gray's findings. I think he's done what I always set out to do, which is to highlight systemic failings, but not apportion personal blame. People do the best they can with their training, with the information they have available, and with the resources they have. This could have been prevented if we review how we work together. We have to look at the issues around privacy. We have to look how to work in a more integrated, collaborative manner. We have to look at the safety of women and children and not place that onus of responsibility onto their shoulders. We absolutely have to make perpetrators accountable. Luke's findings helped me realise, and through the journey before the inquest, Greg was never made accountable. Not once. This is unacceptable. And the biggest change we need to see is how we effectively intervene with perpetrators and work to stop the violence.
Since Luke's death, Rosie Batty has campaigned to improve services for family violence victims. In 2015, Rosie was named Australian of the Year for her work, Coroner Gray congratulating her on her work and assured her that Luke's death was not in vain. For Luke, herself and all the victims of domestic violence, Rosie has given speeches, made public appearances, led marches and sat down with some of Australia's most powerful politicians and media publications. She has not wavered from speaking against family violence, even to this day. Rosie would go on to establish the Luke Batty Foundation and the Never Alone organisation to raise funds and awareness for families in need. Rosie would step down from her role in 2018. Quote, there is only so much one person can do. Unquote. During her Australian of the Year award acceptance speech, Rosie said that family violence is, quote, an entrenched epidemic that we've lived with since time began, so we've got a way to go. I do believe the tide has turned. It's no longer a subject that only occurs behind closed doors. Unquote. For Luke, Rosie and all victims of domestic violence, it is important that we do our part, and if we see something, we say something, so that we stay strong and show perpetrators that their actions will not be tolerated, so we can end domestic violence from our communities for good. If you have your own thoughts and theories on the story we discussed today, or any stories we talk about here on Stolen Lives, please search Stolen Lives Podcast on Facebook, like the page so you don't miss an episode, and join the Stolen Lives discussion group to talk about your thoughts and theories. You can also talk to us on Instagram, Stolen Lives Podcast. If you like what you heard today, we would appreciate it if you share this episode on your social media of choice and subscribe and leave a positive review on your podcast app. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Ali. Hosting and production was also by me, Ali. Music is by Mayu.